From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Columbia University goes to hybrid learning, letting students be virtually in class for the rest of the semester after the school's leadership clears a Gaza protest encampment with more than 100 arrests but fails to prevent it from reforming. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We are joined today by my colleagues, editorial board member Colin Levy and columnist Kim Strassel. Dozens of tents last week occupied a green space outside of Columbia's main library in New York City, an area that protesters had dubbed the Gaza Solidarity Encampment. But finally, the president of Columbia University, Manoush Shafiq, called in the NYPD. Here is part of what she said. "We work hard to balance the rights of students to express political views with the need to protect other students from rhetoric that amounts to harassment and discrimination. We updated our protest policy to allow demonstrations on very short notice and in prime locations in the middle of campus while still allowing students to get to class and labs and libraries to operate. The current encampment violates all of the new policies, severely disrupts campus life, and creates a harassing and intimidating environment for our many students." Colin, the response to that, though, was a clearing of this encampment, more than 100 arrested, but apparently no lack of ability for protesters to reform then. On Monday, the president said that all classes would be remote. And the provost then on Monday afternoon evening said that students would be allowed to dial into classes if they like through the end of the semester, which is almost here. So what is going on? I see some arrests recently at Yale and at New York University.
Right, Kyle. I mean, I think it's really a mess. And I think it's pretty clear that Columbia and many of these other universities, too, are sort of building the plane while they're flying it, adjusting their protest policies, trying to allow their students to express themselves. But this has clearly gotten out of hand and just sort of gotten to where they can't control it. And I think that's clearly the reason that they've gone to this hybrid remote learning policy. But in many ways, I think that is an indication and a message to all of the protesters and to the students that they're not really in control. And I think that message is the dangerous one, a destabilizing one, especially for Jewish students who are finding themselves walking across campus where they're supposed to, this is supposed to be the definition of a safe space on an Ivy University campus, finding themselves harassed and greeted with signs that are endorsing Intifada, suggesting that any of the Israeli counter-protesters should be Hamas's next targets, and any number of other intimidating and harassing actions that are happening on campus now that are really well beyond the normal boundaries of free speech. I think we love to talk about on campus the right to disagree without being disagreeable, and certainly civil discourse and academic freedom. These are incredibly important values on college campuses like Columbia, but that's really not what we're talking about here. This has crossed into another category.
That does seem to be a difference with a long history of campus protests. What we're seeing now includes anti-Semitism on display. There's one video circulating where protesters are forming a human chain and saying, we're going to start taking steps forward to push the quote-unquote Zionists who have entered this protest area, to push them out of that area. There is a letter from an Orthodox rabbi at Columbia saying, what we are witnessing in and around campus is terrible and tragic. It pains me deeply to say that I would strongly recommend you return home as soon as possible and remain home until the reality in and around campus has dramatically improved. And that is an astounding thing, Kim, to hear from a rabbi who is at an Ivy League institution and advising these students that it's not safe potentially for them to be on campus.
This is really important because I think words matter. And one thing that's frustrating about those who are engaged in these demonstrations and also those that are supporting them is they keep saying, well, these are peaceful protests. Okay, fine. We don't necessarily so far have students surrounding Jews in a mob and beating on them, but harassment also should not be tolerated. That's clearly going on here. There are anti-Semitic chants going on. Jews should be killed. Go back to Poland. These kids and all kids at Columbia need to walk through some of these central areas to get to their classes. They feel intimidated and bullied if they try to walk through because they're facing this. And so in some ways, these guys have already won, like to the extent that they are actually shutting down classes. I mean, on Monday, Columbia was virtual. These kids aren't getting an education either. That's not a peaceful protest in my mind, because it does engage in harassment, and because it's also denying all the other students on the campus their ability to partake in what that university exists to provide, which is an education. The fact that we are now going to have some sort of hybrid situation, that's just unacceptable. This shouldn't be happening at all. And it's a recognition that the university is not handling this. And as Colin said, it's also dangerous as well, too, because it's the latest outward boundary of what these universities are agreeing to and tolerating. And it's been building for a long time. And it risks going from harassment and impinging on other people's rights to learn to violence at some point, especially if all these universities do not start taking a hard line.
Another example I would cite is a video that circulated, I think, last week of a protester near Columbia University yelling, "We are all Hamas, and long live Hamas." And Colin, what do you make of the First Amendment argument that you're hearing from these protesters? I mean, to my mind, that's a good example of why it doesn't apply. There is a right to protest, and there is a right to free speech in the United States of America. But if you're disrupting the operations of Columbia University, to my mind, Columbia University is within its rights and maybe in its responsibilities to tell you to go, and if you don't go, to call the cops.
No, that's absolutely right. Look, the basic rule, Kyle, is that the First Amendment does not apply on private property to actions taken by private entities. And, you know, a university is not just a platform for speech, but it has its own First Amendment rights and its own rights to edit the message that it sends to students. As a general matter, a private university can make any decisions it really wants to about what happens on its property. There's no constitutional right for someone to march into my front yard and have a protest there. You know, we saw that illustrated a few weeks ago when a number of anti-Israel protesters decided to hold a protest on the front steps of Berkeley Law School Dean Erwin Chemerinsky. And he came out and said, "You're a guest in our home and please stop." And he said to the protesters, "I'm as much for free speech as all the rest of you, but our home is not a forum for free speech." And something interesting, too, is that he said after that incident and the questions about the anti-Semitism that motivated it, you know, he said that even if the dinner were being held at the law school building, there would still not be a First Amendment right to hold a disruptive protest there. And I think that's a key point that we need to talk about. You know, the Columbia protesters are objecting that any restrictions put on their encampment or on their behavior amount to an infringement of their free speech rights. But that's actually not the case as a constitutional matter. It's the right of Columbia not to have to host disruptive and violent speech that it doesn't agree with. You know, that comes within its private property rights on campus.
Hang tight. We'll be right back in a moment.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Welcome back. Kim, how do you explain the lack of follow-through here by the administration? There's some news stories suggesting that students who had been suspended, those suspensions have already been lifted. Is it just the fact that the faculty is full of lefties who remember the 1960s protests as the good times and think that they stopped the Vietnam War? Is that enough to explain why you have a university president who is giving in to what amounts to the heckler's veto and saying, "We are going to not have students in our classrooms through the rest of this semester because we can't get this protest under control"?
Yes, in a way, you have two levels of intimidation here. You have the students and protesters and harassers who are out on the campus making life miserable for other students. But you also have a faculty that has been actively engaging in intimidation against, for instance, Columbia's president. It was really notable before she went in, and all of this kind of kicked off, obviously, last week when she went in to testify in front of Congress and President Shafeek, the head of Columbia University, beforehand, there was a faculty letter that was sent to her signed by 23 full faculty members saying that by going to this hearing, she was giving into the political theater of a new McCarthyism. Right now, as we speak, the University Senate at Columbia, which, by the way, is a non-binding organization, it doesn't really have any authority. It's made up of faculty and student and administrators, but they are preparing to pass a resolution of censure for the fact that she spoke to Congress and admitted that Columbia had not handled protests that had popped up since October 7th well, and that she actually said favorable things about protecting Jewish students and condemning anti-Semitism. This apparently was something unacceptable to the University Senate, which now want to go after her. So you have that. I think the other problem you have, and this gets to the question about suspensions, is that, as I mentioned before, this is one of the results of a campus culture that has been growing increasingly problematic for years, mostly because university administrators have been tolerating identity and left-wing politics and protests. You can add in all kinds of other things. Grade inflation, the general acceptance of student groups showing up and harassing and canceling speakers who might come to the university and say things they don't like. By the way, I would just put that in the context of their own free speech demands right now, which does show a certain level of hypocrisy. There's never been any consequences to this, really. And I think it was great that Columbia had the police come in and deal with this, with those arrests. But a number of students who were there after multiple warnings, they were suspended. And now, as you say, that's being diluted. My own view is that if you have been issued multiple warnings, you're continuing to defy the administration. What needs to happen here at some of these universities is that you're out, you're expelled, you're done. And you're not just done this year, you're done for your time at that university because you flagrantly violated the rules in a way that made other students feel unsafe. And there has to be some consequences for some of these students. Universities, yes, we like the idea of free expression, et cetera, but rules are rules. And until the universities start following up on enforcing those rules, the students are going to think there really are no consequences for doing anything.
But another piece of the dynamic, perhaps, is that students are now thought of as customers. And at some of these institutions, they are paying five figures or six figures in tuition over the course of 4 years. And that gets to another point that Kim made, which is grade inflation. Don't we have finals coming up? Colin, the thing I keep thinking of is if you are spending your days at Columbia University sitting in a tent in the Gaza encampment, you are probably not going to your classes. Are you passing your classes? Are you flunking out of your classes? And I would point to a couple of stories at similar institutions. This is a report from the Harvard Crimson last year. It says that Harvard College grades have risen significantly in the past 20 years per a newly released report presented at a faculty arts and science meeting. It says that the percentage of A-range grades given to college students in 2020-2021 academic year was 79% compared to 60% a decade earlier. There's a similar story in the Yale Daily News last year. Yale College's mean GPA was 3.7 for the 2022-2023 academic year, and 78.9% of grades given to students were A's or A minuses. Colin, I know that you have to be a good student and a hard worker to get into an institution like Harvard and Yale and Columbia. On the other hand, the idea that 79% of grades at institutions like that are A's makes me wonder how hard are these students really being pushed, particularly if many of them are spending all this time protesting.
Absolutely, Kyle. When I saw that story, I honestly thought of my own children. I have middle schoolers who are up sometimes until midnight doing their homework. So I'm watching these college students at our finest Ivy universities spending their time in tents and forming human chains to harass Jewish students on campus. And it really did beg the question of, don't they have, you know, a thesis to write? But, you know, I don't want to make light of it. I do want to loop back, though. on Kim's point about what's been happening at the faculty too, because I think it's such an important one that, you know, there has been for many decades, you know, within these, you know, Near Eastern studies departments, an academic celebration of leftist revolution and the protest culture. And you join that with a dogma on anti-imperialism, and it's springtime on campus, and it's just, it creates what is really a tinderbox for these sorts of protests that we're seeing now to spiral out of control. And with the students' knowledge that they have their professors' implicit blessing. So it's almost as though they see what they're doing as a natural extension of what they've learned in the classroom. And, you know, I think they feel empowered by it. And I'm not sure that they understand the true damage that they're doing to the community that they're supposedly such an important part of.
Hang tight. We'll be right back after one more break.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. What is happening on Columbia's campus is not staying on Columbia's campus. It is also becoming a political story. So let's listen to responses from a couple of actors in the political arena. First, here is President Joe Biden.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
And here is New York Governor Kathy Hochul.
Right now, there are many students not feeling safe on campus. So we talked about the strategies, how the state can be supportive, but to make sure we do two things, protect public safety and security, enforce state human rights laws, but also protect people's right to peacefully assemble and to have freedom of speech. So that is what we're trying to do here today, is have those conversations. I also met with a group of students. Students are scared. They're afraid to walk on campus. They don't deserve that. They deserve to be in an environment that is free from discrimination as required by state human rights laws.
Kim, what do you make of those responses? It does raise the question, what are the politicians going to do about it? The education department certainly has Columbia University's ear, and Kathy Hochul is someone who's responsible for enforcing those laws that she cited, human rights laws and so forth, in the state of New York.
I mean, listen to both of those statements. It's very, very telling. Yes, both of those politicians, and I would note Democratic politicians, began by condemning any anti-Semitism. But in Joe Biden's case, he felt the need to say, I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians. And Kathy Hochul said, you know, we also want to defend the rights of free speech. This is where they are. I mean, it should not be a difficult call, by the way. This should not be difficult. You condemn what's going on. You condemn the idea that there is a threatening atmosphere on these campuses. You condemn that kids are not able to get to their class. You condemn the problem with law and order. That should be enough for the situation that exists at the moment. But the rock and the hard place for these people is that they have a left that is ever more engaged in this activism and the protests and the pro-Palestinian cause, and they want a ceasefire in Israel. And Joe Biden is worried about his presidential election and who's going to vote and how they're going to vote in Michigan. And that is muddying the clarity of this situation. This should be a very straightforward proposition for these politicians. That's certainly the case for Republicans at the moment who are saying this is inappropriate. This is not to be tolerated. But you have Democrats that keep trying to slither through the middle here and not upset those who are engaged in this kind of behavior, because they're worried about their left and elections.
But it seems to me that the more they try to get out of answering these questions or try to take both sides, the more that it repels some of these voters in the middle who they also need. I mean, think about Joe Biden. He's trying to satisfy pro-Palestine constituencies in Michigan, and he's at the same time alienating other constituencies in Michigan and many other states. So, Colin, from the perspective of campus, it seems to me that the president of Columbia, the president of Yale, where there were recently 50 student protesters arrested on Monday, they're trying to get through the end of the spring semester, hoping things maybe will calm down when we get to the summer months. Students disperse, they go to jobs and internships, they go back home. But politicians, people like Joe Biden, don't necessarily have that out, because this is going to be an issue, it seems to me, going into the summer and going into the presidential election.
Absolutely. I think it's really troubling to hear all of these politicians without, you know, the courage of moral conviction on a really basic level. These are not pure speech considerations that we're talking about. You know, the behavior and the violence that we're seeing the protesters at Columbia, certainly that we've seen at Harvard and other places, those very transparently cross the line into threats and intimidation of other students. And I don't think we or any politician of either party should have any qualms about saying that students who are harassing and intimidating their classmates or encouraging anti-Semitic behavior or creating an environment that hovers around the possibility of violence have crossed that line. I think we have to keep emphasizing that in this discussion about free speech, that the environment of an imminent threat is not at all what free speech on campus is supposed to be. You know, it's supposed to be to have civil discussions, to explore ideas and argue and, you know, maybe even argue with people over the strength of their reasoning. But where we are now is nowhere near that.
Kim, we'll give you the last word, but what would be your advice to someone sitting in the president's office at one of these Ivy League institutions if they're facing a protest like this?
Take a firm stand, because here's the thing. If you step back and you look at this more broadly, you have faculty pressing these administrators. You have the demonstrators pressing these presidents and administrators. But you've got trustees, in some cases, have had their back when they have stood up. That's been the case so far, at least at Columbia. You have donors who, so far, it's been one direction. The witnessing of all of this on campus has really inspired a lot of chagrin among donors, many prominent ones who are cutting their ties with universities. You have parents who are concerned about what actually these universities stand for anymore and whether or not there is any value in spending $90,000 a year to send your kid to an Ivy League university if this is the circus that they're going to go into and the indoctrination they're going to go into, and then add to that the fact that they can't even get to their classes. There's been a lot of growing concern among parents. So there's an enormous community out there that thinks this is the wrong thing to do. So take a firm line. Also, because that would send the message to those engaged in this that they need to stop. Right now, this wandering down the middle and trying to please both sides and being a little mealy-mouthed on this is only encouraging this to grow. I mean, when I watched this begin early last week, the first thing that I thought is, oh my gosh, this is going to become a thing. It felt very much like the BLM protests from 2020, which only grew and spread in part because there were too few city administrators who were willing to deal with those situations at the time. And we know where that left the summer of love in Seattle and a lot of problems for a lot of cities. Universities are facing the same situation if they don't try to take a harder line right now and shut this down.
Thank you, Kim and Colin. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button, and we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.